Mississippi River, she's a gold grind. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, a woman and the kids and the dogs and me. Got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. Grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those wooden moan boys raised on shotguns. We say, from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the Western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. By a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beaching up in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Welcome back to the Mark Kreslin Show here on the Veritas Radio Network, the Crusade Channel. Thanks for joining us. We're live Monday through Friday, 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. You can call us anytime you'd like, 844-5-CRUSADE, 844-527-8723. Yes, it sounds like I'm out on the ledge today, ready to jump. And part of that is, when you do what we do, and you listen, and you kind of even experience this every day, you recognize how tall of a mountain we are trying to climb. We are trying to overcome decades of indoctrination. Heck, I just got out of it myself a few years back. We are trying to deprogram people. We are trying to say there's a better way. Actually, your life will improve. And yet we continue to face the reality that there is this huge mountain we have to climb in order to get to the promised land on the other side. And it will not be the promised land of heaven. There will still be problems on the other side of the mountain. But I would take those problems on the other side of the mountain over the ones we deal with right now. And there are just days when you do what we do, and I count you in that group as well, friends, in the listening audience, when the mountain looks very, very tall. It just looks like, wow, are we ever going to be able to get over that mountain? And maybe not in my lifetime. Part of that is just the fact that I'm 57 and heading into my 60s. I know that I'm a lot closer to that grave than I was 20 years ago, and I don't fear the grave at all. I have absolutely no fear of that. My assurance is in Jesus Christ. But I do fear for my children. As I mentioned in the first segment, I spent the day with my grandson yesterday, and I think about his future. And I think about what kind of life is he going to have? What have we done to him that he doesn't even know has happened to him? My daughter and her husband, John, are going to be adopting their second child here soon. She's 5. And I look at her and I say, what kind of life is she going to have? You know, they don't even know what's going on. They don't know the evil corruption that is coming out of this 10 square mile swamplands. But they look at Grandpa, and without ever saying it, they, I'm sure, if they had the clarity of thought, the maturity of thought, would say, Grandpa, what are you doing to stop this? And I would tell them, I'm doing everything I know to do. And we just need more. Now, Mike, just he and I were talking during the break. The good news is, some good news to report, is that our numbers continue to grow and expand here at the Veritas Radio Network. More and more people are finding us. Perhaps in the near term, this network will go viral as you continue to share it with your friends and family. And thank you, by the way. Perhaps this network will be on the cusp of going viral, and we'll get to that point where we are touching millions of lives daily. And they will hear a new way to think about the problem versus what they are saturated with every day on mainstream talk radio. As Mike describes, this is radio the way it should be. You know, radio can be about much more than just entertainment. Yes, there is an entertainment part of radio. If I just come on here with a monotone voice and read War and Peace, my guess is some of you may hang in there for a while, but a good deal of you, a number of you, would say, wow, that sounds pretty rough. I think I'll go back to Rush. So we do have an obligation to bring these ideas to you in a way that has some measure of entertainment to it. But it can be much, much more than that. Radio really can reach the masses. It really can. And with the advent of the internet and the expansion of the internet, the lack of the FCC controlling it, although it wants to, we can still say what we want to say without the stupid fairness doctrine. Do you all remember the fairness doctrine? That was your federal government attempting to create a new sedition act. Just a different way of doing it. They wanted to squelch speech. This wonderful government that we pledge allegiance to wanted to kill off speech. Well, they haven't gotten to the internet yet. And the internet is really the Wild West, the frontier of information. And I suspect at some point in the not too distant future, we're going to hit a kind of critical mass here. Because you're not getting this kind of radio on the mainstream talk radio circuit. And I'm telling you, the people I talk to are hungering for this kind of radio. And this is indeed radio the way it ought to be. It should be this way. It should be purposeful. And so we can do a lot more than entertain. We can do a lot more here on the radio network than play songs that I like. By the way, good pick last intro, Trent. Thank you for grabbing old Hank. We get to, it's a lot more than that. It is about bringing a new way to think about the problem. It is to not get locked, not get accused of a lack of imagination when it comes to the problem. We are going to have a wide imagination In the last segment, one of our callers said, or Sean said, maybe the only solution is to just totally withdraw and not be productive. And we bristle at that thought. We think, well, why does that have to be the solution? And he may be right. The only way to get away from the evil of this government on an individual basis is just to get off the grid. But yet, Sean will go to his microphone on Sundays. I'll be at mine Monday through Friday, 6 a.m. Central Time to 8 a.m. Central Time. Mike will be at his post this morning at 8. He'll carry it on to 11. We have a whole host of other talks of hosts here on the Veritas Radio Network that will go to their microphones, and we will keep trying. We will keep trying to persuade people at a philosophical level, at a technological level, at a constitution level, at a storytelling level. We will try and continue week after week to offer original programming that says there's a better way, there's a different way to consider the problems we face. And so that gives me hope. I'm not quite yet ready to get off the grid and become just a non-productive backwoodsman. Though there are times it's appealing. I'll be the first to admit that. There are times I think about at least the separatists who left Holland and England in the 1600s had someplace new to go. Yes, it was a big risk to get on one of those wooden ships, get on the Atlantic Ocean and head west. I don't minimize that at all. It was a huge risk. But at least they had somewhere else to go. I guess our next stop is Mars. That's our new frontier. I mean, there are some individual islands that are dotted around the globe that people can buy and I guess isolate yourself. But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about I want to be with a community of other people, but I don't want to be with a community of other people that think this system of government that we live under now is worthy of their effort in voting, is worthy of their effort in discussing. It's what it does. What I want to be is with a group of people to say, no, this government is illegitimate. It is evil. And then take it the next step beyond that and call it what it is and then take steps to get away from it. This is why yesterday, as I was saying on the close of the show yesterday, Jefferson offers three options here. I mean, I don't mean Thomas Jefferson. Don't mishear me. He's not the god of political philosophy. Believe me. But, let's be honest. When they arrived at a point where they decided that they were done with the tyranny they believed they were suffering under King George in Parliament, at some point you sit around a table. Sometimes history can seem so sterile. You read a book and you read about an event, but you got to at times just put yourself in that room and say, at some point, Sam Adams said, hey, guys, we've got to get away from these guys. Before the Declaration was even imagined and Jefferson and the Committee of Five were charged to write it, at some point around some table somewhere, on some horseback riding somewhere, on some travel somewhere, in some tavern somewhere, somebody had to say, hey, let's get away. How about we think about getting away from King George? And probably, depending on the size of the group of Sam Adams or whomever started the conversation, depending on the size of that group he was talking to, there were probably some in the audience that folded their arms and said, well, we are subjects of the king. We can't even consider separating from the king. But then there were some probably in that room who began to nod their heads and say, maybe Adams is on to something here, or whoever it was who started the conversation, whatever group of people started the conversation. They had to have been sitting around that table and started nodding their heads and say, We hadn't heard of this solution before. Yeah, he makes a good point that the king and the parliament is tyrannizing us. They're not representing us in parliament. They're ordering us around. They're taxing us. They're starting to be condescending to us. We're starting to become an American. We have our own identity here in the Americas now. Yeah, I think he might be onto something. You know, he may be right. I need to go home and talk to Wilma about that. And he goes home and he grabs his wife and he talks to her and says, honey, you know what? I was at this meeting and this guy named Sam Adams stood up there and said, you know, we've got to think differently about this problem. The king is not listening to us. He's not heeding our requests. And in fact, they've passed these intolerable acts and they're really putting the screws to us. And this guy said we should think differently about the problem. Maybe we should find a way to get away from them. And you know, there was 20 of us in the room and there were a couple of guys that were just glad to be subjects of the king. They were loyal subjects of the king and they got pretty angry and upset and they folded their hand and they got arms and they got all gruff and said, no, we're loyal subjects to the king. But there was a lot of us in the room that really began to think, maybe this guy's onto something. You know, all those conversations had to have happened before they decided to charge Thomas Jefferson and the Committee of Five with writing the actual declaration. Well, friends, that's where we are. Certainly on this show and on other shows, we're trying to spark a discussion about what to do. And in Jefferson's model of solutions against a government that has gone tyrannical, he offers three. Alter it, abolish it, or throw it off. Well, let's just have a discussion about those three. How about we train ourselves not to talk about Donald Trump, Ted Cruz, Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, and John Kasich? How about we don't talk about them at all? How about we don't talk about what the bipartisan, corrupt, morally bankrupt Congress can do for you? How about we have the conversation that the agitators in Boston had back in 1774, 75, 76? How about we talk about how in a country, in a union of 50 separate and supposedly sovereign states, how do the people of those states alter? If we accept Jefferson's premise that when a government goes tyrannical, in our case, when a government goes evil, he says there are three things to do: alter it, abolish it, or throw it off. If we believe that governments are based on the consent of the governed, if we accept the premise of his argument, in these 50 separate and supposedly sovereign states where the people actually reside, how do the people alter this form of government? How do they abolish it? What is the mechanism to abolish it? And then what is the mechanism to throw it off? Now, he describes in the Declaration that people will suffer for a long time. And as Sean and I were talking last segment, we are suffering, though perhaps not painfully enough yet to want to relieve the suffering. My guess is there will come a point where it will be enough for you, just as it was, as I talked about last segment, Frederick Muhlenberg, Peter Muhlenberg's brother, who was condemning Peter for leaving his pulpit and going and leading the 8th Virginia Regiment with General Washington into battle. Frederick's view was pastors don't get involved in those sorts of things. Pastors stay out of politics. Frederick held that view until, as my good friend Dan Fisher says, until Frederick got pinched by the British himself. And for him, it meant living in New York City, watching the British Army roll in and begin burning churches, and all sorts of difficulties and horrors went on in New York. Frederick felt the pressure at that point, and he fled. And suddenly, Frederick Muhlenberg changed his views. Well, now he goes on to get engaged in politics. He does leave his pulpit. He becomes the first Speaker of the House. So a guy who said, well, let's just pray and trust God and see what happens here. Maybe things are not as bad as you think they are. Well, after he finally felt the pressure of the muzzle, suddenly he had a change of heart. I keep waking up every Monday through Friday, 5 o'clock, getting ready for this show, hoping that we don't have to follow that path. Yet there are times I'm just confronted with the stark reality that maybe that is the path we have to follow. The problem is the power of the United States government, well, the power of this evil government is much, much greater than the power of the King of England and the Parliament back in the 1700s. What they can do to us is much greater and grows daily than what the king could do to the average person in the 1770s. And disgustingly, the bipartisan, corrupt, morally bankrupt, evil, de facto, I'm going to add the word evil to my phrase about this bipartisan, corrupt, this bipartisan, evil, bipartisan, corrupt, bipartisan, morally bankrupt, de facto, national as opposed to federal government, it does what it does under the color of law. And as serfs, as subjects of this new king, we bow before it. And we don't stop and question the legitimacy of the law. We don't stop and question the morality of the law. We just accept that this idea that the federal government has the authority to make all these laws, and then we genuflect to them and we obey them. Well, their power is growing. Their power is not on the decline. What they can do to you is monumental compared to what the king could do to an individual person back in the 1700s. And so we don't need to wait to be pinched. We have been pinched. We just don't feel it yet. They haven't gathered enough power to enforce all that they want to enforce upon us. But they're building. Just like the movie Lord of the Rings, Mordor is growing in power. Mordor is on the move. Don't think for a minute that every year these guys are not expanding their power. Over 100,000 pages of regulations. They are regulating the heck out of you. And that's at the federal level. Look at your state. Look at the thousands of regulations that have been written to regulate you, to control you. There is not a day in your life, 365 of them, that you will experience this year that you are not in violation of something. You, in the listening audience, me, here talking. Today, I will violate some regulation or some law. Now, some I violate purposely. I do not wear my seatbelt. That is my act of protest. How brave of me. But setting aside stupid seatbelt laws, I will break some other regulation just because I woke up this morning. I will do something wrong, as defined by this bipartisan, corrupt, morally bankrupt, evil, de facto, national, as opposed to federal government. And you will too. And the only thing that prevents us from getting pinched like Frederick Muhlenberg is the fact you haven't been caught yet. They haven't moved the crosshairs onto you. You're not the target yet. But to control 320 million people, you don't really need to put the crosshairs on everybody. All they need to do is provide the appearance that we can get you. And let's be honest, friends. You and I both know that if they turn their sights on you, there ain't a dang thing you can do to stop them. You cannot hire enough attorneys. They could destroy your life. And so they control us just based on the premise. They don't have to actually do it. All they need to do it is five or six times a year, broadcast it on ABC, NBC, CBS, whatever. Make it known that we got another citizen who violated one of our corrupt laws. And it has a profound chilling effect on us, doesn't it? We wipe our brow and we say, whew, glad it wasn't me. I need to make sure I don't do that. We don't stop and wonder, should the government have that authority to even do that? We don't stop and wonder about the morality of the law. We don't even entertain those questions. We wipe our brow and say, whew, I better check and see if I've done that in the past. And through propaganda, the government has controlled you. This government that we celebrate, we think there's something unique about this bipartisan, corrupt federal government. We think because they run around and say and talk about the Constitution this and the Constitution that, and they lie when they put their left hands in the Bible and raise their right hands, we get caught up in all that, and we think these guys are actually moral people. Folks, the people in Washington, D.C. are some of the most narcissistic megalomaniacs you will ever encounter in your life. They just do it under the cloak of a Constitution. They like ruling your life. And we send signals to them when we run to the voting booth and vote for them. We tell them, keep tyrannizing us. And they read the signal 5x5, as we used to say back in the old military days. Well, not me, but some of the old pilots back in the 40s and 50s. I read you 5x5. That means I read you loud and clear. And we send that signal to those deceivers, those megalomaniacs, and we tell them, the signal we send is, yeah, keep it up. We're not going to do anything to stop you. In fact, if you come back into our district, whip out your Constitution, and say you support it, heck, man, we'll vote for you. If you can quote a couple of passages out of that Constitution, maybe throw in a Jefferson every now and then, we may donate to your campaign. That's all it takes. It doesn't cost much to get our support. Nope, just say Constitution. And if you throw in that you're going to stop Hillary Clinton, well, by golly, not only are we going to vote for you, not only are we going to support for you, we may put a sign in our front yard. We sell our votes, we sell our loyalty to these narcissistic megalomaniacs very cheaply now, don't we? But then that opens up a whole nother line of questions about us, about the nearly divine we the people. And that is where it gets a little bit touchy, doesn't it? Introspection is a lost art in our world today. Pondering, reflecting, those kinds of ideas. That is a lost discipline. We don't stop and we don't ask, I wonder how I contributed to this. Or did I contribute to this? Nope, Rush told us we've got to get the GOP in there. And I know I've heard that for 30 years, but this time it'll probably work. Where is the introspection? Where is the examination of those claims? Where is the examination of the claims that the Constitution limits a federal government? Have you ever stopped and really asked that question, or do you just accept because some narcissistic sycophant runs around and tells you that he's going to, he or she's going to obey it, that that's enough? Is that really enough that you trust a guy that you're going to give vast power to rule you just because he says the word Constitution in a speech, or he may weave Jefferson or the word Founding Fathers into that speech? Where's the introspection? Where's the examination of the claims? Does the Constitution limit this government? Well, I can assure you of this. The Constitution ain't what you think it is. Not you in the listening audience. My guess is most of you have come to that conclusion. But if you're a new listener, I can assure you of this. The Constitution is not what you think it is. Yes, there is one. There is an actual handwritten Constitution locked up in a hermetically sealed box located in the National Archives. You can find it. You can go wait in line an hour and walk by it and swoon. But have you ever stopped and examined the facts of the claim that the Constitution is a limiting document? That's it, Kreslins. You have gone way too far now, bucko. You are maligning the Constitution. I'm turning you off if you don't repent right now. If you don't get back on board to the Glenn Beck Crusade to save the Constitution, I am out. Because after all, don't you know, that's all we have to do, Kreslins, is restore the Constitution. If we restore it, then presto change-o, that $19 trillion debt will disappear. Those 56 million babies will stop that process of killing more of them. We will start going to war with declarations. We will end all these federal agencies that are questionably created under the Constitution, Kreslins, if we just restore it. So you either repent, Kreslins, and get on the mainstream talk radio bandwagon and start telling us that the Constitution fixes this, or we're turning you off, bucko. I don't want to ever hear out of those lips over your microphone that I should question the Constitution. It is a sacred document. Don't you understand? There was a prayer meeting from May to September of 1787. These guys all sought God, and out popped the Constitution on the 17th. That's what happened, Kreslins. Get with it. We're not asking questions about that document. We don't ask questions about the Bible, do we? Well, we don't ask questions about the Constitution either. When we come back, folks, we're going to pick up this chain of thought. And I want to hear from you. Please give me a call. We'll be right back after these short messages.